Welcome everybody into a brand new episode of Calling It, recording Tuesday, May 11th, just about noon here in Boston. I'm Alex Barth, joined by Alex Lebowitz. We're powered, as always, by CLNS Media. Lebowitz, what's going on?
Not much, man. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. I'm waiting. You know, it was like 70 degrees like a month ago, right? I always do this when I like do the casual open to start the show. It always just devolves to us talking about weather because we're just a couple of dull individuals. But remember when it was like 70 degrees 2 months ago?
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, all right, here we go. And I was busy at the time because it was NFL free agency. It was like, all right, NFL free agency is going to end. And we're going to, you know, get to the draft. And then we had the lull between the draft and free agency. And I think it snowed. Like, it got that bad. So I'm just waiting on the golf weather to come back. I think fingers crossed later this week, but
we'll it's see. Happening. I got a Thursday tee time, so I'm already booked. To be honest, I've already gone out. I probably golfed at least six times so far this year. I have a problem.
I want to if I could. I've been to the range once. That's it.
And I'll say this, the one positive of, you know, the pandemic, and, you know, we talked about it. It was dog shit for me. A lot worse for a lot of other people. But the one positive for me, I got really into golf. And so it's become something like I need to do. I need to at least go to the driving range. I need to hit balls. Because there's no better feeling in the world than hitting like a great drive, like just getting a hold of it, hitting it down the fairway, setting yourself up for a second shot that you will undoubtedly botch. But it's still that one long drive is amazing. And I think if you get into golf, you're always chasing that. But the weather, it's panning out. It's getting better slowly but surely. And we got plenty of time to get more rounds in this year.
Just in time, once it's nice for me to dip back into playoff mode, because we have the Bruins and Celtics right around the corner. Bruins finish up, I believe, Wednesday. And then the Celtics finish up on Saturday. And then they might have the play-in tournament. Weather, you know, let's have that discussion first, Lebowitz. Because I know we've had this discussion before when we talk about baseball's wild card game, right? If you make the wild card game and lose, did you really make the playoffs? I don't believe so. I think you got to the postseason, but you're not a playoff team. Is the NBA play-in tournament, Lebowitz, does that count as making the playoffs in your mind?
I mean, I think if you're a seventh or eighth seed, whatever, I don't know. I guess. I think it depends on your team's expectations. So if the Celtics lose.
Well, OK, so let me phrase this differently.
OK.
The longest playoff drought in the NBA belongs to the Sacramento Kings. It's been 16 years. They're going to be a 10 seed. So they're going to get into the play-in tournament. But they're going to be one like win or go home. If they get into the play-in tournament and lose their first game, should the playoff streak be over or should we still consider it?
No, it doesn't count. Doesn't count. I'm going to say no. I'm going to say no on that. You got to make it in because it's a play in, not a playoff game. So it's like, count, like if you have like 216 seeds put in a play in game, does that technically count as making the tournament? I don't think so.
I think it technically might, but like, I don't count that. That's not, you're not a tournament team if you lose that game.
You don't even play in round one. So
Do you remember when they called that round one and it was super confusing because the first Thursday of March Madness was round two?
Oh, you're right. Yeah, the play-in game you're talking about.
Yeah, that's what they referred to the play-in. It was the first year when they added the 11 seed play-ins too, right? Do you remember that? That was like 5-6 years ago, whenever it was. And they called that the first round. Instead of the first four, they called it the first round. So, you know, 1 versus 16, 8 versus 9, that was all technically for a little bit round two, which was insanely stupid.
That's dumb. That's dumb. It's round one. That's round one. And the first, you know, round of the playoffs for the NBA is when the 8 seed's playing the 1 and the 7's playing the 2. Not when the 7 is playing the 10 and the 8's playing the 9. That's not – no one's going to count that. And maybe over time it changes – but I think for that to change, you need to sustain that process, number one, and you know, number two, just see how it works out. So, yeah, we're not counted. The Celtics, they lose. They miss the playoffs. They also get a lottery pick. So
that's the other thing. Yeah, so that to me tells me you're not a playoff team. If you have a lottery pick, you're not a playoff team.
So there we go. Not the playoffs. The Celtics will lose, and they will not make the playoffs this year, completing what is one of the you know, worst seasons I've seen watching this team in you know, a very long time.
Yeah, I wonder at a certain point if the Celtics should, and I apologize if I've made this joke on this show before. You know how, like, when, like, North Carolina, like, to go back to college basketball, and there, that analogy, it's like North Carolina has a bad year, Duke has a bad year, Kentucky has a bad year, Kansas, whatever, the Blue Bloods, the true Blue Bloods, and they still get invited to the NIT, and they'll just be like, no, right? We're not accepting the invitation. Like, the Celtics are the blue blood of all Blue Bloods in the NBA. I'd love to just see them be like, playing? No, we're the Boston Celtics. Oh my God. Either give a team a free win or you know, put one more team in, but we're declining the invitation to the tournament.
Yeah, they should. I mean, after we saw that loss to the Heat and how they've just been losing to team after team in games they should win, it's been abysmal. It's been a failure of the season. And I would venture to guess, even before Jaylen Brown went down, there's not one guy in that locker room who truly believes that this team had a shot at competing in the playoffs. So, yeah, I would love them to save us from the misery of having to watch them play again more than we have to, simply because this season has just been so disappointing. So, yeah, I know you're saying that in jest, but I don't think there's a Celtics fan looking forward to watch them, you know, in a play-in game. No one is.
Oh, there's Celtics fans that still believe. There are. You know who they are. There were people saying during that first half on Sunday, when Miami allowed 79 or when Miami scored 79 points, the most allowed by the Celtics in a first half since 1963, Lebowitz. There were fans saying, what can you do? Miami's getting good shots. What can the Celtics do? Miami's getting good shots. Oh, don't let them get good shots. Play defense. That's what. But no, Miami was getting good looks. What can you do? It's the modern NBA. You want them to play defense? Please, what can you do? There's a lot they could have done, but there's still people who believe. You know that.
There are always going to be a faction of delusional fans. There's no doubt about that. I don't take them seriously. I don't find their opinions to be worthwhile or worth even.
They were loud on Sunday.
I mean, it's ridiculous. And people, like, you can go back to that San Antonio Spurs game when they were down 32 at the half. It's like, yeah, it's great. You came back. You showed some fight in the second half. You're giving up 75 points in the first half because that's what they gave up. They gave up like 75 points in that first half in that game.
I think it was somebody had the stat. It was the first time in a long time, if maybe ever, three out of five games they allowed 70 plus points in the first half.
I mean, it's just despicable. It's despicable. And like this team, it's a lot more talented than that. I know they don't have a lot of depth. I know that, you know, the Ainge didn't have a great offseason, but like they have Jaylen Brown. They have, you know, Marcus Smart. They have some decent defensive players on that team. They're not world changers, most of the roster, but allowing that many points against teams that shouldn't be putting up that many points, it's awful. And it's clear that there's a glaring hole on this team in that coaching staff. And I've said this before, I'll say it again, and I'll probably say it until the deed is done. Brad Stevens needs to be out. They need a complete overhaul simply because they've taken such a step back. There's been such a regression. You have two guys that you should probably keep, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum. Outside of that, blow it up. Get rid of whoever you want. Find a new coach. Find a new, some new character, I guess. They need something different. They need a real culture change.
So that's what I think it comes down to here is with these last couple of games, I see people saying, oh, shut it down. You don't need any more injuries. No, I would say the opposite. I want to see, and the Celtics should use this game. And I'm going to go above Danny. I think Wick Grosbeck and ownership needs to use these next couple of games to see, okay, this team has had a problem with just sheer will all season. There's less on the line now than there's been at any point. Who's going to go out there and show me they want it? Who's going to go out there and show me they want to be on this roster next year? They want to be a part of this team next year. How good of a job is the coaching staff doing in instilling that message? And if the coaching staff can't get these guys to try down the stretch, and if the players won't try down the stretch, who is the person who created this culture? Ownership needs to take these last couple games and look from the top down as to who really wants to be a part of this thing. That's where I'm at. I think these games, you know, They're not eliminated. They've actually clinched a spot in the play-in. So they're going to play that game. But and technically they still could make the regular playoffs. They would need a ton of help, but it still could happen. But I'm looking at these games and saying, including the play-in, and saying, okay, who's showing me they want to be here? Who's showing me they want to be a part of this? There is one untouchable person on this roster for me. That's Jason Tatum. I personally wouldn't move Marcus Smart because I think he's somebody you need to get that old Celtics culture back. But if you get a really good deal for him, do it. Everybody else, I'm not saying I'm giving players away. I would hardly give Jaylen Brown away. I think he's a fantastic player. But if you can shake things up, they can't tinker. The past couple off seasons, it's been they're close. And so they just tinker and they've made value moves. Oh, well, we could get Doug McDermott and we could get Miles Turner, but let's get this future asset that we're actually just going to turn into the same player. But let's get this future asset instead, and we'll go with the value pickups of Tristan Thompson over Miles Turner. Tristan Thompson over Miles Turner and Jeff Teague over Doug McDermott, or Jeff Teague over Victor Oladipo. Like, that's been the mindset. And they can't do that. They have to go all in one of two ways. They either need major changes or, I get they want to look at the future. I get that. I do. And the line has been they're still a young team. Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are relatively young, but next year is going to be Jaylen Brown's fifth year in the league. Jason Tatum's fourth. They're not young by NBA standards anymore. They're veterans. They've been around. They've done that. They're experienced. So, at a certain point, I know Danny Ainge doesn't want to do this. I know it's not what he does. He has to push all those chips into the table and go and sacrifice some future assets, trade prospects, trade draft picks, and go and get another legitimate piece to help Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. I think that one of those two things, like something has to hit this offseason. They have to somehow change what they've been doing.
Absolutely. I think here's the dilemma, though. You can't start from zero. You can't trade Jaylen Brown for, a top three pick or whatever it is.
But that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying, can you trade Jaylen Brown for Bradley Beal? Can you trade Jaylen Brown for Karl Anthony Towns?
Which would be awesome. And they should definitely
explore that. That's when I'm saying, I would move Jaylen Brown. Like, I'm talking about that sort of deal. I'm not moving Jaylen Brown for a pick and starting over. They need to do the opposite of that. They need to just up the talent level instantly. And moving Brown might do that. It would be very hard to do, but it might do that.
Well, and that's also where being a young team plays to their advantage. They do have guys who probably have a future in this league and have a decent amount of value, whether it's Rob Williams or Aaron Nesmith. I know they're not going to be – they're not projected to be superstars, but they could have some really good NBA careers and be foundational pieces to an extent on teams that are maybe in the process of looking to rebuild and getting rid of some of their star players.
Well, that's the problem to me is, I feel like the path in the past, and it's worked. I shouldn't say it's a problem because this has worked, but the path in the past has been we have these young players who are coming up. Instead of trading them, let's wait for them to mature. And that was fine when Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown were still a year or two away. Now it's, okay, you've got to, sacrifice the year or two of development and go and trade those players for guys who are ready and at their peak right now. I think it's time to make that switch in mentality.
Yeah. And you can't be connected to the prospects. You can't. And if this past year doesn't give Danny Ainge the urge to disconnect from some of the guys that he's helped develop, I don't know what will. And again, maybe
he's admitted he's been too loyal to his own guys in terms of trades.
Yes. And then he also does things that might alienate players, like trading Isaiah Thomas, which was a worthwhile trade. But it's a weird dichotomy there with Ainge. I think people just like to pick on the Celtics for whatever reason. Either way, there needs to be a change of the mindset. But the biggest thing that I hit on, it's about culture. And obviously, you need to have talent. You need to have culture on top of that. This season, they've relied too much on young guys. They haven't had the veteran presence to build up a culture that you need to win games in the NBA, to play good defense, to play consistently. And you need new players and a new coach. What I worry about is, too much of an overhaul at once. As much as I want that, and as much as that drastic change is completely necessary, we're talking about hiring a new coach, bringing him in, and then bringing in, you know, having a turnover of say 5-6 players, whatever it is, that's going to be a lot to manage. And maybe that culture, that shock is going to do this organization well. I'd hope it would. But like, again, more patience will be necessary to see this through. And I think, to put it simply, the situation they're in sucks. It sucks because there's no one way to go about it. And regardless of which direction they do go, there's going to be a lot of growing pains. So I know we're getting ahead of ourselves talking about the off season, but
no, but I think that's after that effort on Sunday.
Yeah.
I think that's where we have to be at.
100%.
Because, I mean, if you look at it, it was the biggest game of the year. Unquestionable biggest game of the year. National television matinee. And you know what? It was Tommy Heinsohn Day. And I'm not going to put no stock into that. I know it sounds ridiculous to say, oh, they came out flat on Tommy Heinsohn Day. All of these players knew who Tommy was. He's a cornerstone of the organization. And the man represented one thing above all else, and it was hustle. And to come out in a game with that stakes on a day honoring that man and put out that effort, that's rough. That, I mean, it's just a little extra twist of the knife, isn't it?
It is. It is. And, that stuff does matter. But, again, when you have a team that's kind of already checked out.
Well, so that's my point. They had every reason in the world to get up for that game, and they didn't.
Do you think they get along? Like, because they're like, I go back to Kyrie Irving, and I hate that I'm doing this. I really do, because it might, you know, cause me to acknowledge that maybe I didn't at the time acknowledge the transgressions on this roster when it came from a culture standpoint. Kyrie Irving, he stinks. My least favorite player of all time. I will continue to hate him. But, maybe he wasn't all that wrong when it came to Boston not being a great fit and not having a quote-unquote winning culture or whatever the real reason is that he left, whether it was a gut feeling or whatnot. You know, this team has completely fallen. And I know you can go back to last year before COVID. They were playing really well without Kyrie. They were one of the better teams in the NBA. And then they botched the Gordon Hayward thing. He gets hurt. And this offseason's a mess. And they come in this year flat as hell. But it's hard for me not to believe that, you know, some of the issues that played a role into the problems of this season were existent back when Kyrie was in Boston and may have played a role in his leaving the team. So I how deep is this? And you touched on it early. Like, they need to really need to look at this from the top to bottom and address this issue as seriously as possible. And it's not like they haven't tried to do that, but this is a deep-rooted problem. It appears to be. It appears to be a deep-rooted problem. Maybe it's guys who have been around here too long who, you know, have overstayed their welcome or their message has become stale, whatever it is. But it's clear that, you know, some serious change is in store and some introspection on the side of not only the players, not only the coaches, but, you know, Danny Ainge and Wick Grosbeck.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think where it comes from, I think there's the – and maybe Kyrie is a part of this. And Kyrie had won a title, so – say what you will about the Kyrie X. He was He was a big part in winning the title, and he kind of earned the right to be one of these guys that, oh, the regular season is what it is. Talk to me when we get to the playoffs. Say what you will about Kyrie, he earned that right. Would you disagree with that as the ultimate Kyrie hater? Would you disagree with that?
I'm sorry, you broke up. Can you repeat that?
Say what you will about the way Kyrie Irving acts. He earned the right to be one of these guys that kind of phones it in the regular season and talk to me when we get to the playoffs.
Yeah, that's more representative of the culture of the NBA more than it is about Kyrie Irving.
But he was somebody who would back that up. He was, more so than LeBron, I believe, the reason that the Cavs won that title. He should have been the MVP of that finals. He was unbelievable in that series. So maybe Kyrie's the reason that this attitude is here. Maybe he's not. I don't know. I'm not going to put it on him. It's just made me think of it. But the Celtics kind of act like that, don't they? I feel like they very much have a talk to us when we get to the conference championship mentality. They've never won a conference championship with this core. They've gotten there, but they've never won one. I don't know that this team can act like that. And I feel like they have that mentality. And I feel like there's just kind of a, oh, you know, woe is us, we're doing what we can, sort of thing. I'll say this too, in terms of the Celtics and that mentality and all that. We've heard all year, right? Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum don't have enough help. They don't have enough help for the Jays. Can those guys not help each other? Like, isn't Jaylen Brown really good help for Jason Tatum? And isn't Jason Tatum really good help for Jaylen Brown?
Well, it doesn't help when Tatum shoots 3-for-20 from the field.
Yeah, you know, and they have off games, sure. But I guess there's just this, those guys, I feel like, both feel as though they're expected to carry the load, which they should. But I feel like they feel the weight of the team on their shoulders. And at the same time, they don't really want to carry that weight until the postseason. And I think especially now with this play-in tournament where seeding at the bottom is very important, I don't know that that mentality can stick.
No, it can't. It can't. And I think that's, you know, you hit on it. There are certain guys who can pull that off. There are certain guys who have, you know, the backing to pull that off. Yeah, I guess Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, they're walking before they crawl in regard to the mentality and trying to get to a point where they can do the load management thing and not have to worry about being ready as a team for the playoffs. And this kind of goes back to the depth issues. Like, maybe they should have that mentality. Maybe they should have, you know, teammates that justify them taking it easy at some points or having that load management aspect, and they don't. But as competitors, you got to acknowledge that. And you have to be the guy who, you know, is the last in, the first in, the last out before you are taken off, a Wednesday back to back because of your sore right knee or whatever it is. I don't know. But consistency is a problem. Consistency is a major problem. And if you have no team chemistry, you have no team leadership, which they've had to rely on Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum for. And in my opinion, they've fallen woefully short on you know, being effective in those roles. When you don't have that, this is what happens. This is what happens. So, yeah, I hear what you're saying. Like, but I don't know. It's just like everyone deserves a little bit of blame. At least when you talk about that starting five and the coaching staff and Ainge, like it's all of them. It's all of them. And, you know, well, I wish they had more support. I wish they had a better mentality, too. And it just this entire season, this team was so difficult to root for. I stopped rooting for them about 2 months ago because the writing's been on the wall. It's going to be an interesting offseason. Jaylen Brown. I wonder what his future is in Boston. I wonder what Marcus Smart's future is in Boston. I kind of feel like I know what Brad Stevens' future is in Boston. But I think more than anything, I'm curious to see who they want to bring in. What do they think the solution is here? So we'll see.
We will. I mean, I think you hit it on the head. The question now is how much changes and what changes. And then across the hall, you have the Boston Bruins, who are incredibly fun to root for right now. The Taylor Hall acquisition was a home run, but they are going to get the Washington Capitals in the first round of the playoffs. And I don't want to play the Capitals right now, Lebowitz. I think you look at what that team went through last week, and for better or worse, they rallied around Tom Wilson, and they rallied around turning into the villains of the NHL. And on top of that, I don't know if I've explained this on the show. I have this theory. It's called the Ray Lewis effect. In 2013, or was it 2012? Might have been 2012. Yeah, 2012. The Baltimore Ravens were a good, not great team. Ray Lewis announces he's retiring. They go on this incredible run and win the Super Bowl, right? You know what I'm talking about? So
2013, I believe. Or 2013. 2013 was the Super Bowl, I believe. 2012 was the season. Maybe it was the season.
So that's what I that's what I thought. Yeah, because it was my freshman year of college. Yeah. So, I wonder if with Zdeno Chara, we don't know how much longer he's going to play. If there's some Ray Lewis effect with Zdeno Chara, again, they rallied around Tom Wilson. They're just a very good team. This team scares me going into the playoffs. This is a red hot team going into the playoffs. The Bruins, I'm not ruling the Bruins out. I think it's going to be a nasty series. And let's not forget, they play in the regular season to close it out. So the bad blood's going to be there right away come game one. But this is a tough draw for the Bruins.
Yeah, I think there's positives and negatives. It's hockey. Hockey is one of those sports where you don't know what the result of any series is going to be before you go into it. Really, you can guess, but we see a lot of upsets and there's a lot of parity, which is great. Great from a fan's perspective. This is a rivalry. These are two teams that have been battling all season long, and two of arguably the top teams in not only the division but in that conference. And it's the best of the best. I think we've seen how the Bruins have come together really since the trade deadline with the additions of Mike Riley and Taylor Hall and, you know, Swayman coming on board. And they've got something going. So you mentioned the Tom Wilson aspect, and I think that absolutely plays a role. And I think they are using that as fuel. I think the Bruins have a similar thing going on in a different way, but there's chemistry brewing there. And specifically with that second line, we saw yesterday Taylor Hall with the overtime goal to win it, and Krejci had assist on both of his goals, and it seems like they're meshing. This is going to be a 6-7 game series. That's my opinion. And these two,
I think for sure this is going seven.
So, I'm just excited for good hockey. And the reality is, if the Bruins do make it out of this series and actually win, the momentum stemming from that, for both teams, really, I mean, it can't be overstated. So, you could argue the winner of this series is winning the Cup. And I wouldn't really disagree with you with that take. So, there's bad blood here. It's going to be chippy. It's going to be great. It's playoff hockey. I'm going to try to go to a game, by the way. It should be a good one.
We have actually, it was yesterday, right? Was when the capacity increased.
Yep. 50% May 10th.
May 10th. Okay. So maybe the building gets bumping a little bit. It hasn't totally felt, there's been a couple times where I felt the pop. It hasn't totally felt that, but yeah, I mean, I like what the Bruins can do. I do think this, I think whoever wins that series between them and Washington, that team's going far.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they're at least winning the next round, right? And I'm not sure how that stems out, but it comes down to that momentum. And when you beat the best team other than you, you're going to gain that. Although, again, it's hockey. You never know what's going to happen. But I'm curious to see how everything plays out. I'm curious to see how Tuukka plays, because this has been a season which he hasn't been on the ice as much as he would have liked. And then you have that option backing him up in Swayman, who I'm assuming is going to be the backup goalie on the roster for the postseason. If it's Halak instead, I mean, the brutal decision by Cassidy, but we'll see what goes on. I think that, you know, these two teams probably are really pissed off they have to play each other. That's the reality of the situation.
Well, isn't that the beauty of it? But yeah, the Rask one's interesting too, because Swayman's been red hot. And with the condensed schedule, you wonder if the Bruins maybe, there's been no indication that they would, but, you know, does Swayman play at all in the playoffs? Even if Rask is playing well, is there something where maybe they get Rask extra rest? Something like that. I think the goalie situation has developed really interesting. And I talked about the Ray Lewis effect before, actually. Tuukka Rask is on the last year of his contract, and the Bruins basically now have his replacement ready to go. It looks like that Jeremy Swayman can be the next guy. I wonder if there's some Ray Lewis effect with Tuukka Rask.
Yeah, it's possible. He has 1 year after this season, correct?
I thought he was done. Let me pull it up.
I think he has one more year after this
season. You're talking about Rask, right?
Rask, yes.
Not Swayman, yeah.
Not Swayman. And that is great that they have a potential succession plan there. But yeah, who knows? I mean,
no, this is it. Final year, Tuukka Rask.
This
contract.
Is it. Oh, wow.
At 33. So yep.
That's a factor. And, you know, last year, I think a lot of people wanted to make something out of him departing from the bubble, which, you know, hindsight was not a good look. Obviously, when you have family issues, fortunately,
yeah,
everything's
well,
all right.
If he comes back and win and helps him win the thing this year, I think that's all forgotten.
But my point is, the players don't see it that way. They still respect hell out of the guy. And you want to talk about the Bruins core over the last decade plus. Chara was a part of it. Now he's on the other side. But it's Rask, Bergeron, Marchand, and Krejci. Those are the guys. So if this is Rask last season, you know, he was the goalie of the 2010s for the Bees, with, you know, in addition to Tim Thomas, obviously. He was the guy. So that's a big, big change for any organization to undertake when you have somebody like that. But again, he's 34, 35, right? Like
34. He actually just turned 34 yesterday.
So he turned 34. Happy birthday, Tuke. 34. So he still has something left in the tank. Goalies can play effectively late into their 30s. So it might not necessarily be his last year in Boston, but if there's any uncertainty, surely that can be motivation, not just for him, but for the entire team.
Yeah, and I mean, when you look at this core, it's kind of the opposite of what we talked about with the Celtics. This core, Bergeron, Marchand, Krejci, that really being it. I guess you can throw Kevin Miller in there. They do have a cup, so you can't say they didn't win one. But that was, you know, Bergeron played a big part on that team. Krejci was unreal in that playoffs, but they had Zdeno Chara. They had Tim Thomas in net. They had Milan Lucic. They had Mark Recchi. I mean, it wasn't as much their team as it is now. That Bergeron, Marchand, Krejci core, and you'll throw Rask in there as well, because again, he has a cup, but he was the backup that year. Every time that core, without that other supporting cast, has gotten deep, they haven't been able to finish the run. And now you have this new core coming up with Pastrnak and McAvoy. I'm doing like accents and not accents. You know what I'm talking about. You have that younger group coming up now, and they're going to be their own thing. But you don't know how many more chances Bergeron, Marchand, Krejci, Rask are going to have at it. And boy, you'd like to see that group come away with one. Because if they can win it this year, they go 2-2 in cup finals. And sure, one of them, they had a ton of help, but they got one on their own. They got the last one. Like, that's what you want to see. You don't want to see them peter out early again this year. I think there's a lot at stake. And look, Patrice Bergeron, all-time great player in the history of the game. Absolutely. Tuukka Rask, probably the best goalie in Bruins history. But if they never get one on their own, that's going to be tough. That's going to be really tough to swallow.
Yeah, their legacy is on the line. Their legacy is on the line right now. And they're the third most successful team since the turn of the century, right? The Celtics are clearly number four in that category. But there's pride on the line for sure. And I think you also want the legacy for their younger guys to improve. You want guys like Pastrnak to have this as something that you know is a part of what they accomplished as a Bruin. So, the legacy factor is definitely a big thing here. And again, going up against a team like the Washington Capitals round one, that adds to the whole storyline, the whole narrative here. And we'll see. There's a lot riding here. And I think it's also fair to look back and be grateful that the Bruins have been a very competitive, good hockey team really since 2010. And before that, they were a good hockey team as well. But we've been pretty lucky. Obviously, you don't want to go 1-2 in the Stanley Cup Finals. You want to go 2-1. You'd rather have that. But they've gotten there multiple times. They've gotten to the playoffs multiple times. But there is the argument, there is the mindset that, you know, you get there that often, you're right on the doorstep that often, you can't close the deal. You can't do it. The first time you got lucky, it was the last three that you couldn't do it. It's like a Buffalo Bills situation. And it's, you could compare it to the Tom Brady stuff. You know, he doesn't win 2014. What does that do to his legacy? And that's the beauty of sports, and that's the beauty of these storylines.
Right. So, I mean, we'll say, again, I not to put too much – I think they're great players. I do. I don't think that it – you know, numbers still go up to the rafters, all of that. But you'd like to see them get one on their own, which I think is what it comes down to. Speaking of legacies, a guy purely based on legacy, Tim Tebow. I can't believe this level. It's the year 2021, we're talking about Tim Tebow as an NFL player. Like Urban Meyer, he already had strike one when he hired the I think his name was Chris Taylor, the Iowa strength and conditioning coach, right? Who allegedly made some racially insensitive comments, a number of racially insensitive comments to players at Iowa, got fired there. Urban Meyer hires him shortly after. He gets let go within 24 hours due to the backlash. That's strike one. Now he's going to bring in Tim Tebow, and you have guys actually competing for roster spots, and you as the coach need to establish yourself as a leader, and you're going to go drag out a 33-year-old failed minor league baseball player. like, the nonsense aside, and Tim Tebow cannot play tight end. Maybe if he was playing running back, I'd buy this a little bit. And I've heard, you know, oh, well, he'll take some of the weight off Trevor Lawrence's shoulders in terms of the media. Oh, well, he'll teach Trevor Lawrence how to be a leader. Even if either of those are remotely true, it's not worth what you're risking in the locker room.
Yeah, I think it's a slap in the face to other players who fight hard Absolutely. To make NFL rosters. And, you know, Tim Tebow, at some point, he's got to understand what he's doing. And the fact that he's riding his name and his connections that have really nothing to do with his ability on the football field. It may have at one time, but clearly doesn't have anything to do with his, you know, his prowess at the tight end position, which, by the way, he probably should have transitioned to a long time ago.
Right.
It has to do with who he is. And, you know, the fact that Urban Meyer is his best buddy. And there's also the factor that if he plays three games, he qualifies for, you know, the, I don't know what the word for it is, but he gets the insurance and the pension that comes with being an NFL player for 3 years. I doubt that plays a role, because that guy's going to be set regardless of what happens here. But I didn't care when he was doing it in the minor leagues. You have so many teams, you have so many players, there's plenty of opportunity for guys to make it. When you're playing a position that's one super difficult to play, ask a ton of the guys who play it. Maybe the position that requires the most versatility clearly is the position that requires the most versatility on the offensive side of the ball. That's not something he's going to pick up. I think everyone understands that he's not going to do well at that position as a tight end at 33 years old, picking up the new position. And it's just, we talked about legacy with the Bruins. This guy's legacy is going down the drain with this charade that he's pulling. And I don't know how you can look at it and cheer it on.
Yeah. I just can't get behind it. I couldn't get behind it the first time around, to be fair. Even when he was like of age to play in the NFL, the guy's never done it for me. I get it. He won a bunch of games. I don't think he's particularly skilled. If he had any sort of ability, he wouldn't have gone and played minor league baseball, and he wouldn't have come back as a tight end. So I can't. The one thing that sucks is I had this great stat that's now no longer relevant. Well, it's relevant until July. After going to training camp with the Mets, or spring training, pardon me, with the Mets, this spring, Lebowitz, Tim Tebow, Heisman winner, former first-round NFL draft pick Tim Tebow, had taken part in more spring trainings than NFL training camps.
Yeah, it's brutal. And did he deserve to be there, or was he there to just sell jerseys and tickets?
Maybe at first, like, the guy was a world-class athlete, and maybe the Mets thought, like, okay, we'll take a look. Can't hurt to take a look. But yeah, after that first year, we should have known that it wasn't real.
Yeah, at some point you gotta cut the charade, cut the gimmick, and move on. And Tim Tebow has been doing this golly gee thing his entire career, and just been like, I want to do one thing and one thing only. Like, the reason you're doing that has nothing to do with your athletic ability. It's because you're this big Johnny football type figure. You're one of the greatest college football players ever. No one's denying that. You did some great things, a great athlete. What you did in the NFL, you overaccomplished. No one, like, credit where it's due. But it's your marketability that's getting you these places. It's the fact that you are this A-list caliber guy because of your personality and kind of the all-American boy thing you got going on. And I'm not faulting him for having that, but when you rely on that to accomplish things that have nothing to do with that, that's where I have a problem. And well, that's exactly what's going on with him signing with the Jaguars.
His first tweet after the announcement was him selling some sort of keto diet.
Yeah, there you go.
So,
A lot of people have had that criticism of Tim Tebow. He's not authentic. He's not, you know, I think he's a religious guy. I think he's probably a decent, genuine person. I think that he kind of knows what he's doing beyond, you know, the claim that it's just in the pursuit of a dream. I think he understands that remaining relevant is advantageous to him beyond simply an athletic standpoint. And it just comes across that he's taking advantage of that aspect of his life. And maybe that's fine. Like, maybe I would do the same thing. I don't know. But it bothers me. I also want to know who pursued who. Tebow reached out to
Urban Meyer. I would guess Tebow called Urban Meyer. And somebody pointed this out, too. There's going to be a whole run now of former Florida and Ohio State players, and I guess maybe Utah, calling Urban Meyer looking for their next chance.
Yeah. Who's that fat quarterback they had? He's been out of the league a couple of years. He's next. I forget his name.
At Ohio State. Haskins?
Ago. Not Haskins.
Jones?
Cardale Jones. That might be it.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, he was in the XFL last year.
There you go. So maybe he's there. There's one other guy who really blew up, and I'm forgetting who he is now, and I probably should have known that before I made that comment. Either way, yeah, this sets a dangerous precedent when you have him. Like, who's – I was going to say Aaron Hernandez. Obviously, that's not happening. But, like, where do you draw the line? Stop bringing guys back trying to, you know, score some nostalgia points and assemble a football team. So I also worry for Trevor Lawrence. I'd be upset if I saw this signing go down.
Yeah, let's say he makes the team, because the Jaguars' depth at tight end isn't great. I'm not totally ruling out him making the team. He's going to block. This former college quarterback who's 33 years old is going to block NFL pass rushers coming at your top draft pick? Yikes.
I mean, I think he's going to be up for a rude awakening when he goes up against guys who are bubble players, realistically, who play that position and are a billion times better than he is. Because you got it, like, you put Ryan Izzo in that training camp, he's demolishing Tim Tebow in every category. You would hope. I mean, for his sake. Maybe Tim Tebow surprises some people, but, it's just not going to happen for a 33-year-old who's been out of the game for so long and has never played the position.
It's going to be interesting to follow, definitely, throughout training camp. And it's a good thing we get the preseason back this year. Because imagine if Tim Tebow came back in that context, but we didn't have the preseason. Right, and we didn't get to see him.
Yeah,
that'd be such a bummer.
It would be it'd be funny if he just showed up on opening day, first game of the season, made the roster, and then he just stinks. He's just horrible. It's like, what are you doing, Urban? But we're gonna see it. We're gonna see it, and you bet your ass there's gonna be a lot of press there, a lot of publicity.
Oh yeah,
covering this, but it's a bad move. Urban Meyer knows it. I just don't understand why he would go ahead with it, knowing the spectacle that it's gonna bring. Number one. And how it looks and reflects on him at number two. So maybe he shocks me. Maybe Urban Meyer knows something I don't. I doubt it, though.
He doesn't. It's not going to work. I don't know what it is, but it's not going to work. Real quick, before we wrap it up here, there's this video going around on Twitter, at least on Twitter. It might be going around on Instagram, of this woman. And she claims to be – it's a pasta hack or whatever. And she basically just pours pasta sauce – cheese and spaghetti all over her counter, just straight up on her counter, and then mixes it like they mix the ice cream at Cold Stone Creamery. And this is like a thing. I keep seeing these videos of people cooking right on their counters. And I know it's a ploy. I know it's people trying to go viral. Fine, whatever. You couldn't give me enough impressions to clean all of that up. Right? like aside from the fact, I know, it's gross, blah, blah, blah. I don't know if they're eating it or not. The counter looks clean enough, whatever. The cleanup has to be miserable.
That's the least of my concerns when I watch that video.
My instant concern is who's cleaning this up.
Well, you think that they would eat it, number one.
But even if you eat it, I mean, you can't eat. What are they licking the counters clean of the sauce?
Maybe. Who knows? If they're savage enough to pour it on the counter in the first place.
That's a fair point.
That's I wouldn't put it past them. They're putting like V8, like tomato sauce in a V8 bottle on a counter, uncooked, cold, because you gotta heat it up. I'm not a snob when it comes. Like, you don't need to make a fresh sauce from scratch, but for God's sake, have some respect for yourself. Then they take pasta and just pour it out into this whole concoction and, frozen meatballs, whatever it is. It's disgusting. It really is. Just gross, barbaric behavior on a really nice kitchen top. That's all it is. And my opinion, they know that that's gross. they understand, like, oh, people are going to hate this. That's why they're doing it, because stuff like that goes viral, and, you know, more power to them. You can pull that off. Go for it. But it's still disgusting, and my opinion of you, you know, is as low as can be. So you get a lot of that stuff. I saw one, I was telling you about this earlier, where there is like a hot dog casserole thing, and it made me want to vomit, like, instantly. And they know it's disgusting. They know that there's way more effective ways to make good food with similar types of ingredients, but they don't do it. And it's because they want the clout, and we all fall for it. Shame on us.
Who's cleaning it up? That's really all I care about. Like, I get the reason why they do. Have you seen the other videos where it's like, they started as a YouTube thing. I don't know if it's the same people who are doing it. There used to be this, well, it still exists, but it was a big thing like 7-8 years ago. It was a YouTube channel. And it was basically like, it started as like how-to videos, and a lot of them were cooking. Some of them weren't.
Epic Mealtime.
Was that the one where, no, not Epic Mealtime was the one where they made like the massive meals, right?
Yes. Yeah.
No, so this was something else. It'd be a guy doing, it was like how to make eggs, and he would like crack an egg in the pan. Then he'd crack an egg a little bit harder, and then he'd like just throw an egg as hard as he could off the pan. It would ricochet and get all over the stove. Then he'd like dump an entire bag of flour on it. He would just
That funny.
You do or don't?
I do. I think that's hilarious.
See those videos? Like, I see those coming back now, where it's people, like, there was one the other day where some woman poured, I don't remember, it was something involving a waffle iron. I don't remember exactly what it was, but she put like pasta in a waffle iron, and then she put ketchup like on the waffle iron, but like, well, it was closed or something. It was literally a mess.
I saw, yeah, it's really, I like the videos where
it
starts off.
Do you know what videos
off,
I'm talking about? Did you ever see those?
I didn't see the one you just were referring to, but I've seen the ones where it's like, it starts off like
How to Basic is the channel. I'm looking at it right. I just found it. How to Basic.
And it just goes off the rails progressively. I think that's a hilarious concept. I find that very funny. I saw one where a guy
smashes the tomatoes with his hand. Like, he tries to use his hand as a knife. He's just mushing the tomatoes with his hand.
Yeah, it's just stupid. It's dumb and stupid and simple. And I think that's funny. I saw one where the other day where it's a guy, they're doing like an instructional video on how to like hammer a nail. And he has he's holding the nail with his left hand and the hammer with his right. And he goes down and he hits his hand. And then it has a big X, like, this is what you don't do. And then what you do. And it's like, he has pliers and he's holding the nail with pliers, and he goes to hit the nail, but he hits his hand again, which is like, you have to intentionally try to hit your hand. It's very funny. You got to watch it, because it's just like, oh, it's just a stupid how-to video. And it's like, oh no, he made the same exact mistake, despite taking the step that they told you to take. It's so dumb. It's so simple. It's very childish, but I laugh every time just because you're not expecting it. And there's something about just simple things that are funny. I find simple stuff to be the funniest. Simple food's the best. People try too hard. And, you know, I just find that stuff to, it just, like, it's like, what if we like made a video on how to do something and we just did it wrong? That's the entire premise. And every time, I think it's hilarious. You know, it's obviously probably been overdone by now, but the ones I've seen are great.
So there's this other video. I don't know why this just made me think of this, but have you ever seen the YouTube video of the guy trying to slap cook a chicken?
Slap cook a chicken?
Okay, so think basic physics here for a second, right? When energy is transferred from one source to another, some of it is ultimately released as heat, right? That's like science. Mm-hmm. So when you hit something, there's heat created at the point of contact, right? So this mm-hmm. guy on YouTube, basically, his theory is, well, if every time you hit something, you create heat, could you hit something enough times or hit something hard enough to cook it? And he builds this device with like a bunch of rotating gloves. I don't want to give away the ending, but he's basically trying to slap cook the chicken. Can he hit the chicken enough times or hard enough to create enough heat to cook it?
I'll have to watch. I'm curious to see.
A trip. Definitely.
I'm assuming that it just destroys the chicken and it doesn't get cooked, but
some of it takes two. I don't want to give away the ending. I don't that is so like, yeah, he tries, because you have to hit it. There's a balance. If you he does the math. In theory, if you hit it, like just patted it with your hand, it would take about 30 years to cook it, but the heat doesn't necessarily retain. So you obviously have to go faster than that. And if you hit it harder, the harder you hit it, the faster it'll cook. But like you said, if you hit it too hard, it breaks down. So he tries to figure out if there's a balance. It's very entertaining. Mm-hmm. It's also just a guy slapping a chicken.
Yes.
Not a live animal chicken. Like, it's not animal cruelty.
It's a raw chicken.
Breast he buys from the supermarket.
That'd actually be really funny, though, if he's trying to cook a live chicken by just slapping it and it never actually, you know, even dies. gets cooked.
Well, no, when you see the machine that he makes, that would have done it. Yeah. But so I don't know
I'll
how
check
we got
that out.
To that. But that is a absolutely check out the slap cooking a chicken on YouTube. It's a good time. Mm-hmm. It's like the ultimate. Did you ever try to cook an egg on the sidewalk as a kid?
No.
You never did that? I did it once with my friend. And we actually did it. It works. If it's hot enough.
It's hot enough, yeah.
But you
I've seen that done in like Texas. Like I've seen videos of it. But I never thought it got hot enough to do that here.
It was like a really bad heat wave. I was at his house and his driveway had just gotten resurfaced. So you know how like it's like the driveway's like especially black.
Oh, yeah,
like,
it's like
right
steam.
After it. Yeah. So it's like especially dark and it was smoother too. So it was kind of like the right circumstance. But
was
no,
it non-stick?
We did it. What?
Was it non-stick?
We sprayed Pam on the driveway. Yeah, his mom wasn't super excited about it, but
it's cool. That's like a cool little science experiment, though. That's fun. Just don't go out barefoot.
I was kind of like, hey, like, do you know that thing where people burn ants with the magnifying glass? Like, do you think that works? And my friend was like, well, let's like try something similar, but not be psychopaths.
Yeah, let's not murder things that are living.
Well, so we used the magnifying glass to like help cook the egg too. So we cooked it from both sides. Yeah.
There you go. You got that broil on.
Exactly. Yeah. So maybe I'll call that friend up and try to slap cook a chicken. He's like a I don't know exactly what he does, but he's not somebody who you would think of as cooking eggs or slap cooking chickens. But I might have to call him and see if he wants to help me slap cook a chicken.
We need an update for sure.
Let me put it this way. He went to an Ivy League school.
Okay. So this is probably way beyond him at this point.
I'm going to call this Ivy League graduate later today and say, hey, help me slap. All right.
Yeah, I need your slaps.
Right. We're off the rails here. We'll wrap it up. But, thanks everybody for tuning in. We'll have more next week. We'll have actual playoff talk next week. I know we kind of got into it, but we'll know. We knew the Bruins opponent. We'll get into the Celtics playoff. Or they might be out by the time we record next week. We'll see. We'll get into all that. We'll talk some Red Sox as well. Make sure to follow us on Twitter @CallingItPodcast. Check us out online, clnsmedia.com, under the podcast tab. For Alex Lebowitz, I'm Alex Barth. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time.